My name is Stephen Paul Martin, and I was born on the 24th of September 1964 and grew up in Bletchley. Right, I can't remember the exact time I discovered punk, but the first time I saw punks in real life was Stanier Square in Bletchley, probably late 78, possibly early 79, and it totally blew me away, and I knew I wanted to be part of that. And one of the people, main people I remember, is you, Alison. Absolute beacon. I was definitely looking for an alternative at the age of 14. Bletchley was not really an open-minded market town. And punk shook it up a bit, which I loved. I was becoming aware of my sexuality, and being openly gay in Bletchley at the time was difficult, especially for a teenager. So I do remember hearing about this mythical character called Spider. I never got to meet him, but it was Deb and Al and Sonia told me about this gay punk. And I was like, wow, you can be a punk and you can be gay. So, you know, thank you, Spider. I never met you, but you were an inspiration, really. Before punk, the options generally were being a skinhead or a casual, which I didn't really fancy either of them. So I saw punk as my gateway to freedom and the perfect way to express myself. I never really classed myself as a hardcore punk like some of my anarchic compadres, and didn't arrive at the party until the initial wave was almost over and the scene had become very diverse already. In the early days, I hung out with Sonia Julia, Debbie Bodymead, Al Porter and Mark Mason. Lots of time around Sonia's and hanging out with Gwen, offering a sherry, nice glass of sherry. And Al was just a bit of a legend back then. He was older than us, and I remember hanging out, waiting for Deb to finish school. And he was just like the coolest person around at the time. Still have so much admiration for the man. Also around that time, I was at Lord Grey School at the time as well. We used to pop round to Jill and Pills at lunchtime and listen to lots of dub reggae and weird psychedelic music like Gong, Here and Now and stuff like that, and just sat on beanbags with incense going. It was lovely. And I think that's where I first met Glenn O'Halloran, pretty sure it was. So yeah, it was a right nice bunch of interesting folk around there. And the other place I used to hang out for a while was Lindy White's flat in Mellish Court. That would be with Conrad, Sonia and Mark. And there was, I can't really say what used to go on there, but there was all sorts of shenanigans. That was a lot of fun as well. So that was the beginning of it for me. And I went through the old bondage trousers phase. We ended up with a group from school that used to go to gigs and hang out down the King's Road. We used to go to Carnaby Street and get our badges and stuff like that. And that was Carl Pilcher and Dave Sitton, Debbie Lundberg, Phil Smith, Simon Geely, Fiona Hamilton, Sue Atkins and Dean Woodington, who I haven't seen for years, lovely chap. So that was our little gang, not so punky, but we used to hang out and go to gigs in London. Right, with the hair, some kind punk legend told me to use Nestle Light from Boots. I remember plucking the courage up to ask you how you got your hair, you know, to stick up, and it was green, I think, at the time, which was just, you know, it was amazing. So I got the Nestle Light. And it went ginger, like it does, because it weren't really very strong. And I tried putting green food colouring in it. It just looked like, you know, just turgid, horrible. I used to use Shield soap to try and spike it. And that was, if I remember rightly, it was like a blue soap with bits in it. So you end up with bits in your hair. And there was also a blue gel, hair gel. It was probably one of the first hair gels from Boots. But that didn't really work either. But, you know, it was worth a go. And also, you know, you pick up tips off of other punks and stuff. I tried the spray starch, tried hairspray, but my hair was quite fine and soft, so it wasn't really that effective, especially if it rained or you were at a sweaty gig. It was just like carnage. Colour-wise, I started with the food colouring, which didn't really work that well, and that was obviously just like a car crash if it rained. And then Crazy Colour came on the scene. I think by then I'd worked out how to bleach my hair, and if your hair was nice and dry, it'd suck up all the colour. So I used to have a lot of fun with that. And I think Sonia mentioned one particular incident, and it was the only time I ever really had any hassle being a punk. I dyed my hair, I can only describe it as the colour of like a traffic cone, and it was amazing. I mean, it was, you know, I was so pleased with it. And I went to school with it, and my hair was quite, probably about 2-inch spikes. And I was so proud of this colour, and I think I managed to get it to spike up properly that day. And I got to the school gates and they turned me away. They said, you can't come in looking like that. You know, you've got to go home, either dye it or cover it up. So I toddled off back to my house in Cottenham Grove, got this massive beanie hat that was, you know, used to roll up into a like normal size hat. But if you unrolled it, it was about 2 foot long. So I stuffed it full of newspaper, stuck it on my head and went back to school. Which worked. They couldn't really tell me why I'd done what they said. I think it was the same night I went back home, got my orange hair out again, and my dad was going shopping in Bletchley, and I said, oh, I'll come along with you. And for the first time, he said, you're not going downtown with me looking like that. And I was so upset because up until that point, my parents had both been, well, my dad didn't really, just didn't say anything about anything, but my mum, you know, she absolutely loved it. And I was absolutely so upset, and I went running around to Sonia's and said, God, run away from home, can I stay with you? So Gwen got the sherry out again. And I decided to sleep in the ambulance that night, and I woke up the next day, cold, damp. I had picked up a bug overnight or something, and I just pitifully went home. I succumbed and dyed my hair black, which was all right. Clothes-wise, I couldn't afford leather jackets or DMs at that point. I was still at school doing the paper round. So monkey boots, army surplus shop for shirts and army green trousers, mum's sewing machine. She was pretty good with the sewing machine, so I was always, you know, getting her to modify my clothes. And then, of course, there was the treacherous jumble sales where you'd always see punks, you know, queuing up to get in. But it was quite treacherous because the grannies, you know, they're this down to an art. They'd be at the front with their elbows out, you know, little 5 foot grannies. You couldn't move them, but that was a really good source of clothes to modify, to make do and amend. So it was like suit jackets, T-shirts, jeans, whatever you could pick up, really. And then you'd just get your mum to fart around with it a bit, and off you went. There was one time I come home from school and the record player just slowing down to a stop sort of thing. I looked on the record on the deck, and it was a Nina Hagen record. So you've been listening to my Nina Hagen records? And she just looked at me and went, no. She loved Nina Hagen. But she had a pair of like peacock blue, really, I don't know what you call them, just skin tight trousers, almost 50s looking. And I'd have my bondage trousers on, and she'd put her blue things on, and we'd put punk and pogo together in the afternoon. I mean, she was so cool, my mum, bless her. But I can honestly say I never had any hassle at all. And the only abuse, if you can call it that, was when I got turned away from school. I don't know if I got lucky or what, but I never had any trouble, so I'm grateful for that. So the city centre opened in 1979, and along with it came Criminal Records. And I remember that so well. It was just the coolest place to hang out. There was a tiny selection of records and fanzines, but you just, you know, it was just a cool place. But I do remember, I don't think anyone else has mentioned this, and I can't remember the details, but someone tipped us off that there was going to be a massive fight. I think it was either the Skins or the Mods were going to come up to the city centre, and they were asked all the punks to go up there, you know, to stand together sort of thing. I was absolutely terrified because I'd never had a fight in my life. But I don't think anything happened. I think crowds of people turned up, but just got dispersed by the security. So that was a lucky miss. So record shops, obviously the local one of choice was FL Moore, and that's where we, if I remember rightly, we used to get our tickets from there as well for all the bigger gigs. Woolies, Bob's Records, and I don't think anyone's mentioned Rumbelows. They used to like get punk records in, and obviously the normal clientele, they wouldn't buy them, so they'd end up in the bargain bin. So I'd always go in the little bargain bin in Rumbelows and see what they had. There was Criminal Records, obviously, but they'd never had massive stock up there. So like many others, I'd sit there every night with my little radio next to the bed to listen to John Peel, and I'd make notes of all the records I wanted to buy, and I'd go straight down to FL Moore in the morning, and if they didn't have it, I'd ask them to order it for me. And as far as I know, I've still got every record that I bought from that period. I couldn't tell you what the first punk record was, but I've still got my entire collection. I think around that time I was discovering my own musicality and generally gravitated towards more melodic tunes. I loved female vocalists for some reason, like Susie, Polystyrene, Pauline Murray, Honey Bane, The Slits, Nina Hagen, and even the wonderful gravelly voice of Vice Versa. Just loved Poison Girls. I was also, as quite a few people remember, I was obsessed with Toya for a while after seeing her on Shoestring. That was 1979, but the love affair didn't last long. We went to see her loads of us went down to see her at Hammersmith Odeon after her first big hit, and it was just full of school kids and their mums and dads. It was just ridiculous. So that was Toya. First big gig I went to was the Undertones, and I think that was in early 1980. I wasn't a huge fan of the Undertones, but it was, you know, it was just good to see a big band in a big venue. Venues-wise, these have all been mentioned before. There was a Compass Club, obviously, being in Bletchley, Derwent Drive Youth Club, Newport Pagnell Youth Club, the back room at the Cannon, and occasionally we'd go up to the Navigation. Art Nouveau, who went on to Picajigoog, who played up there, and I think Fictitious supported them. And they were, as been mentioned before, they were a little bit aloof, and all the punks at the front were spitting at Nick Beggs, and he said, "If you don't stop spitting at me, we're going to go home," or something like that. And someone got the microphone and biffed it in his mouth. And I think he went off then. That was it. I don't think the gig happened, or you know, it may have been delayed or something. And I think that was the same night that Tiggles decided to do a stage dive. So he leapt off with confidence, and the crowd just dispersed, and he went flat on his face. But I definitely remember the stage dive. Maybe that was, I don't know, perhaps the Cannon or somewhere like that. Or it might even have been the night they supported Bauhaus at Newport Pagnell. And that same night, I remember there was a band called Trance. I think they were from Luton or somewhere that way. They weren't Milton Keynes. I really liked them as well. So if we went further afield at that time, it would have been Aylesbury Friars, Dunstable Civic Hall. I think he used to get my dad to take me there. And, you know, they were both great venues, both gone now, unfortunately. Regarding local bands, I've made a little list. So it was Fictitious, Ethnic Minority, The Russians, who I loved. They come from Northampton, and I'm still friends with Julie, the singer. I've got the Flying Ducks down here, and I can't remember if they were strictly a punk band, or they were a fun band, weren't they? I remember Rob was very entertaining. Trance, as I mentioned before, UK Decay, Bauhaus from Northampton, Dancing Counterparts from Milton Keynes. Then there was Part One. Now, look, there's a little story there, because I went to school with them. They were all in the year above me. It was Mark, or Jake Baker, as he is now, Mark Ferrelli, Chris Pascoe, and Bob Leith. And they used to come around my house and just hang out. My mum loved them. She loved them all coming around. She was always making milky coffee and biscuits and stuff like that. So that was at the beginning of their career. And even though I was never managed to join a punk band, when I got my first keyboard, they invited me to go to a rehearsal with them at Buckingham. But I don't think it wasn't musical enough for me. I think they had me playing four notes over and over and over and over again, and that was it. You know, I never got asked back. Fanzines as well. I remember four here that I remember. There's Hardcore Royalty, Don't Dictate, Toxic Graffiti. I found a couple of copies of one called The Poser, but I don't know if that was a local one. And then the one I can remember had Spiz in it, a big interview with Spiz. So things were moving, you know, a lot happened, a lot changed in a short space of time. And like I said, I missed the initial wave of punk. And I went out and bought my first keyboard, my first synthesizer, and that instantly took me in a slightly different direction and further away from the anarcho scene for sure, even though I was a fan of Crass and Poison Girls and everything that came with it. That time in music, I thought was amazing. It was punk, new wave, electronic disco. They were all merging and making it up as they went along. And anyone could ever go, which was something definitely taken from punk. I think if punk hadn't happened, that whole morphing of music wouldn't have happened. I started clubbing at Das Bunker, it was called, I think, at the time in Northampton in 81, which had more of a goth vibe, even though goth wasn't even a thing really then. Then in 1982, I met Trevor Clark, started working at Virgin Records, and he introduced me to the gay scene in London. And then the Starting Gate happened around about the same time, and it kind of took me further away from punk, even though there were punks there. It was all very, very inclusive. And about that time, I met Twiz too, who introduced me to all sorts of amazing music. We're still really good friends to this day. Still really good friends with a lot of the old punks, actually, which says something. Including yourself. So I think, to put it in a nutshell, the whole punk vibe stays with you, and it was definitely a very important part of my evolution as a human being. That's what I kind of, how I sum it up, really. I don't think you ever stop being a punk inside. And, you know, even up until a couple of years ago, I was still fiddling around with peacock blue crops and things like that. And, you know, I haven't got any hair now, but I used to love playing with it. I mean, I'm not a huge political person, but just the basic things the punk taught me, you know, the whole movement. There was like the anti-vivisection thing, there was the CND, there was women's rights. You know, it was an incredible list of worthy things to believe in. You know, we weren't taught things like that at school. So those sort of things stay with you, obviously. The politics, even though I didn't go on any of the marches or demonstrations or anything, not to my knowledge, I sort of believed in everything that punk stood for, really, and still do. This is for Sonia. We were round our house one day, and I think we might have been drinking cider or definitely something fizzy, and she'll remember this. She was singing along to X-Ray Specs, and she went, "Freddie, try to strangle me with my plastic popper boots."